Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to the sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of the sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on Mushing.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert, and you're listening to the Mushing Podcast. And today I am joined by an Iditarod finisher. Her name is Sydney Bale. She is a physical therapist here in the Matsu Valley and also a trail neighbor. She and I run on the same trails right here in our backyard. Sydney, how's it going today?
It's going great. It's good to be back home off the trail and getting settled back into real life again, which is kind of a bit strange. I've been kind of walking around in circles in the house being like, man, I haven't had this much time in a long time. I don't quite know what to do with myself, but it's been great.
So we are doing this episode just about 3 or 4 days after the finisher's banquet. So when you say it's good to be off the trail, you're literally back in the last couple of days. First off, congratulations on your 25th place finish at 12 days, 4 hours, 56 minutes, and 32 seconds. That is a heck of a feat. I know you attempted Iditarod last year, is that right?
Correct.
And scratched, and here you are. I guess the first question I have for you is, what does it feel like to be an Iditarod finisher?
Man, it feels great. So yeah, we came into this season just more calm and prepared and not as many nerves as last year. And so I just felt a sense of calm and readiness for the trail ahead. And it feels great to have made it to Nome and crossed the finish line, and even more great to have done it on one of the more traditional routes. So got to do the burn and the steps and the gorge and all that stuff that you always hear about.
So let's take a step back here, Sydney, and talk about your lead up to dog mushing. I know you're from North Dakota. What brought you to Alaska, and how did you get involved with the crazy sport of dog mushing?
it wasn't some long lost childhood dream or anything like that. My husband and I had lived kind of all over the country trying to find that spot where we felt we belonged and that was a great fit for us. And we finally, after trying out many states, we thought, man, Alaska seems like the land of adventure and we love the outdoors and that seems like the place we should go. So we packed up and moved to Alaska, and I'm a physical therapist. And so one of my first patients was Cindy Abbott's husband out in Willow. And so I saw their beautiful home, and all of her race photos and bibs were around the house, and she was never around because she was out running dogs. But Larry would always tell me stories from the trail, and I thought, man, that seems pretty cool. I think I want to do that. And it was really that simple of a thought. I totally did not know what I was getting myself into fully. Went and watched my first Iditarod restart in Willow, and I was like, oh, heck yeah, this is definitely something I want to do. And so after talking to Cindy Abbott, she got me connected with Vern Halter and Susan Whiten. And I worked as a handler for them for a couple weeks. And then Vern said, you're going to run dogs today. And I said, well, do I get a lesson or anything? And he said, just don't let go. And away we went and went through and quickly just fell in love with every minute of it and the dogs and the lifestyle and everything. And quickly went through my qualifiers and then signed up for Iditarod. So I kind of went on the fast track.
Yes. And you'd mentioned Cindy and Vern and her husband and his wife and all of that. It sort of fell in your lap, I guess, because you were working with Cindy's husband. And of course she is, or I assume was then, the kennel partner with Vern Halter. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. She had stopped racing at that point. She was retired, but she was still training and actively running the dogs with Vern every day out there. So yeah, that was how I got connected with everybody.
Okay. And you said that you're a physical therapist, and you also said that you came over to handle for Vern. That is kind of an unlikely relationship in today's age. Typically, I'm sure you're very well and are aware, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are too. Usually it is the younger crowd, if you know what I mean, that are getting in their feet wet and, you know, they don't have a job. They're sort of vagabonds. They're doing the whole thing. That's the handler crew. But here you are, a professional healthcare worker. And what, did you do this as a side gig or what?
Yeah, I mean, I just said, you don't have to pay me. Like, I just want to get involved with the dogs. Like, I'll come scoop dog poop for free. Like, I just want to learn and get involved and see what this is all about. And Vern obviously saw something in me in those initial few weeks. And he was like, no, we're done with this. Like, you're going to run dogs and you want to qualify and run Iditarod. So let's do this.
Okay.
Okay.
For folks that do not know the name Vern Halter, multiple time Iditarod and Yukon Quest finisher, as well as his wife, and we talked about Cindy as well, ran Iditarod under that kennel name. And I know that he has had several people run his dogs in Iditarod, including a young man from Brazil several years ago, maybe a decade now or so. So it is definitely a world-class operation. We live in the same neighborhood as Vern, and he has a beautiful home, beautiful kennel, and of course, we have beautiful trails here, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I think I might be a little biased, but I think some of the best trail system in the world, actually.
And nobody uses them. We're going to keep that under our vest. Just a few of us are out there, isn't that right?
Yeah, I hardly, especially this season, I hardly saw anybody out there. I ran into you a couple times, but other than that, I really had the trails mostly to myself.
Right. So you said you did your qualifiers. What year was that? Was that in 2023?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it must have been. Yeah, it must have been 2023. So my first race was the Goose Bay 150. And then I ran Copper Basin 300. And then my final qualifier was the Yukon Quest Alaska 300.
Okay. And that prepared you to do your first Iditarod attempt. And here you are this year, ready to rock and roll. You said the dogs look good. You look good. Plenty of snow. The weather was beautiful here most of the winter. Very cold. And of course, that kind of smacked everybody in the face on those early days of Iditarod. So let's jump over to the race itself. Like we said, you just came off the trail a few days ago. Tell us a little bit about it. Maybe a story or two. What was the race like?
Well, it was amazing, you know, just seeing all that beautiful country that you always hear about. And, you know, of course, I was nervous to do the steps and the gorge because you always hear these horror stories. And so I was going down the steps and I thought, well, I must have missed the steps. Like, this isn't so bad, guys. This isn't bad. And then I got to the last step where it drops you down onto the river. And there I went yard sailing down, and I thought I was going to lose the dog team because the sled kind of crashed to the right and I fell off, and then the sled flipped to the left. And luckily I felt the handlebars slipping out of my fingers, and I was like, oh no. And then the sled ran into the snowbank, thank goodness, and stopped me. And so we got flipped upright and away we went. And I thought, oh, that's what the steps are all about. Okay.
Even at home, right? It's either that first or that last step that we always trip on.
Yep.
We never trip in the middle. It's always that first or last. So there on the northern route, as you mentioned, kind of a traditional route over the last decade or so, it's done the Fairbanks route a couple of times because of lack of snow. But this year it was really heavy. I remember hearing from Mark Nordman at the media briefing that snow was just ridiculous there after the Alaska Range, heading over into the burn and, you know, all of that up towards Ophir. What were the conditions like?
Yeah, it was super windy coming into Finger Lake, and just snow blowing everywhere, crazy moguls. So that was that. And then, you know, just some sugar snow, and getting into Finger Lake was pretty tough with the wind and the storms going through. But yeah, we had pretty cold weather, pretty high winds throughout. Really, everything after Squintna was pretty cold and pretty windy most of the race.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about your favorite checkpoint and your favorite moments on the trail in a second. But I guess there was a lot of hubbub about your sleds out there on the trail. It's my understanding that you used 5 sleds and broke 2. Is that right?
That is accurate. Yes.
So for folks that are listening, they may not be super fans of dog mushing. They, you know, they may follow the race sort of like other people follow the Olympics. They have a basic understanding of dynamics and all of that. First off, can you explain how a sled can break like that? And what is the process when you pull into the checkpoint? Because I know you use some other people's sleds and some folks that had already scratched. So tell us about the dynamics of how a sled can just sort of break under our feet. And then what is the process to use other people's gear when you're out on the trail?
Yeah, so I wish I had some like crazy story of I smacked into this tree and my sled crumbled, but it's sort of just my first sled broke at the top of Rainy Pass. And I suppose maybe after hitting some tree stumps going through the steps and the shale rock at the top of the pass, I don't know, but my left runner broke. And so I had to go down the gorge with a broken runner. And by the time I was through the gorge, 3 out of my 4 stanchions on my tail dragger had snapped. And the 4th one was hanging on by a thread. And I thought, well, I can't fit all this gear into the front of my sled bag. And I can't carry this tail dragger. Like, I'm just going to have to leave it on the side of the trail and report it to the judge when I get in. But luckily, it made it by a thread. So I got into Roan with a pretty busted up sled. And yeah, some mushers and one of the judges, Greg Parvin, really helped me out at Roan. We sawed off the left runner. And so I left the tail dragger in Roan. So I left with a really condensed sled, got rid of a bunch of gear, and then tried to drive this sled with one runner that was a couple feet shorter than the other into Nikolai, and got it into Nikolai. And then at Nikolai, Michelle Phillips had broken a sled and left it there. And her sled was far less broken than mine. And so I switched and took her sled into McGrath. And I had my second sled and trailer shipped to McGrath. So then when I got to McGrath, I switched to my new sled and trailer. And that went smooth all the way to Caltag. And then we got on 10 miles outside of Caltag. There were some really big moguls. And I looked down, I went over top of one of the moguls, looked down and heard a click, click, looked down, both runners snapped.
Oh, man.
I was like, oh, crap. All right. So I planned to camp at Old Woman Cabin halfway to Unicleet, and I used my inReach to message my husband to say, hey, can you contact a race judge or Nordman and see if there's a sled in Unicleet that I can use? I think I can limp this sled into Unicleet, but is there another musher who had a sled sent there? Because that's a common place where mushers will send a finishing sled, so a lighter, smaller sled to finish with. They'll send that to Unicleet and leave their heavier sled there. So I thought I had a pretty good chance that somebody would have a sled there that I could use. And luckily Mila had a sled. And so I got into Unicleet, took Mila's sled, which didn't really have very good brakes or a track pad. And so then I got into Elam, and that is where Mila had ended her race. And so then I used her other sled to the finish line. And so that was 5 sleds to get to Nome. So the rules say, you know, you can send out 2 extra sleds and then another musher in the race can help another musher in the race. And so luckily Michelle Phillips and Mila saved my butt, and I was able to use their sleds and able to get to Nome. So I owe a lot to those two ladies for sure.
Very interesting. Two questions here. First off, on the using the other folks' sled, is that disorder protocol? Do you have to get permission from that particular musher, even though they scratched? Do you just talk to the race judge? Or what do you do to just walk on over and grab another sled?
Yeah, so everything goes through the race judge. So the race judge will then call ahead and they'll figure out, you know, hopefully you'll get lucky that the person is maybe at the next checkpoint ahead of you. And so they'll call ahead to that checkpoint and they'll talk to, say, Michelle Phillips and say, hey, Sydney's in this predicament. Do you mind if she uses your sled? And yes, so they have to give permission to use their equipment. You can't just see a sled and take it and use it.
Right.
But the judges really help facilitate that communication on up the trail.
So with the two broken runner incidences, was it ever a time where you just sort of hanging on with one leg, or was it broken behind you?
They broke right behind the footboards.
Okay, so behind you then.
So, yeah, so it was a lot better than being broken further up on the sled for sure.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So you head on in. Were you part of the crew that was stuck there in White Mountain?
Yes, I was part of the 10 in White Mountain.
So what was the deal with that? Of course, we heard about the weather and the storms and them holding you guys up. Was it something like 30, 36 hours?
Yeah, I think I was there 34 hours.
And it was because of weather.
Yeah, it was because of weather. So coming from Elam, probably the hardest, craziest weather run was really from Elam into White Mountain, coming over Little McKinley. I thought we just kept getting blown, you know, your side hilling and the sled keeps flipping. And it then I think, okay, we just got to, once we get on the other side of Little McKinley, it can't be windy on both sides. But it was. And coming over through Gullivan and the whole way into White Mountain, it was just the craziest winds I've ever been in. And, you know, blowing over 50 for sure. And so made it into White Mountain. And the race judge said, you know, the trail up ahead is really rough. If you can't leave here by midnight, then, you know, you're going to be held here till Friday. And I was like, well, I can't leave before midnight. It's 11 PM and I have to do a mandatory 8.
Right.
And so the message at first was the trail was closed. Nobody's going forward. But then by the time I fed and went up to the checkpoint, the message was the trail is open. You can go if you want to. We highly advise against it, but the trail is open. And we all kind of talked amongst ourselves and, you know, the top 20 had already finished. So we were 21 through, you know, 30 back there. And so it didn't, you know, it didn't really make sense for somebody to go rogue and push ahead on their own. And so everybody was kind of in agreement that we would wait till the weather cleared. And we just kept checking the weather and getting reports. And then we kind of saw a clear window Friday morning to take off. I think we took off around 9:30 in the morning and made it into Nome.
And was it sort of a pack of you guys going out together, or do you guys sort of take your time leaving?
I mean, we kind of everybody kind of took off on their own. You know, we didn't all leave in a big pack, but I think we were all really probably fairly close to each other.
Okay.
You know, not close enough where I could see anybody, but I think we were pretty close to each other.
So heading into Nome, that has to be a very exciting and surreal experience. All of this work leading up to this and you not knowing less than a half of a decade ago what dog mushing really is. And here you are at 1,000 miles under your belt, coming under the arch. What did that feel like?
Oh, that was amazing. You know, you think about it the whole race, and especially the last few checkpoints, you know, you start counting down, okay, only 4 more runs, you know, 2 more runs. And yeah, I didn't really know what to expect. But when it really hit me was about a mile out, they sound the alarm in town, and it kind of sounds like a tornado alarm back home in North Dakota. So the alarm goes off in town, and then your police escort, right as you're coming up off of the beach onto Front Street, your police escort is there and, you know, lights on and escorts you all the way down to the finishing chute. And that's when it hit me, when I heard that siren go off, and I just got goosebumps and started tearing up. And that's when it was like, holy cow, we actually did it. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah, it's got to be a special feeling for sure. And you finished right around 7 p.m., just a few minutes ahead of Sam Papperman and just a little bit in front of Brenda Mackey. So you didn't finish in the middle of the night. Were there a bunch of people out there cheering you guys on?
Yeah, and, you know, I think it was kind of neat because the top 20, like we had said, had already come in and had been in for over 24 hours. And then there was the 10 of us that got held up. And so all of the, you know, top 20 mushers, pretty much everybody was out there. And I had a pretty big group of family and friends that were in Nome. And yeah, so it was pretty special. There was a lot of people there for sure.
Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about your dogs. You've been with these guys for a few years now, but can you share a quick story about one of your favorites?
Yeah, one of the dogs that comes to my mind is Flew. He was kind of a leader that bloomed later in life, and he was a young dog when I started with Vern. He's six now, so he was a young dog and hadn't led, and so he was kind of the first leader that I got to truly develop from the beginning, you know, from putting him in lead to the first time, and alongside with Vern, of course, and all of his guidance. But yeah, so he's a pretty special dog, and we just kind of have a really unique bond. You know, when we pull into a checkpoint, whether he's in lead or not, he always wants to nuzzle up against my leg and rub all over me. And yeah, we just have a pretty close bond between the two of us, but he is one of my top leaders. And other than open water, he will not go through open water, but besides open water, he'll take you through anything.
Okay. And Flew there. I know Vern does a lot of naming in crews. I know he had a tool crew. We had one of his dogs named Rasp several years ago. Was he part of one of these crews? And if so, what can you tell us about his litter mates?
Yeah, Flew is part of the fire litter. So okay. We have Flew, Damper, Kindling, Ash, Ember. I'm forgetting somebody, but yeah, so he's part of the fire litter, and he's 6 years old now, and we have a lot of fun naming dogs. So there's a theme to every litter that we have, and we have a lot of fun and some heated debates on what the theme should be sometimes.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do. If you've been doing this a long time, it's tough not to name the same dog that another dog's name was twice. I like how he names his dogs for sure. So you're done. You got your belt buckle, you got your patch, you're ready to go. You're heading back home, back to the real world. And it's my understanding, Sydney, that you're not the only physical therapist. Is Kevin Hansen a physical therapist as well?
Yeah. So I actually met Kevin for the first time at the rookie meeting back in December. And he was like, hey, we went to the same PT school back in North Dakota. I was like, oh, you know, a few years apart. And so, yeah, we both are graduates of the University of North Dakota of their Doctorate of Physical Therapy program. And he's a physical therapist up in Kotzebue.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
So now that you're home, do you need any physical therapy yourself? You got some aching bones?
Yeah, I'm a little stiff. I actually had a massage earlier today, and my massage therapist told me, you're a mess. I was like, I told you I was going to come back a mess.
Right. So before we get into our questions that we always ask, what is next for you, Sydney? Are you planning on doing more Iditarods, mentoring the next person up? What?
Yeah, more Iditarods. I don't know about mentoring up. I mean, I think that's the best way to give back to the mushing community. So maybe someday, but definitely keep racing Iditarod and you should see us signed up for next year for sure.
And are you planning on running under the kennel over here at Vern's, getting your own dogs? What's the plan in the further future?
Yeah, I don't know for sure yet, but I think the plan as I know it today is to stick with Vern, and you know, he's got a pretty nice setup. We kind of call it the Taj Mahal over there. So it would be hard to beat Vern's setup, and he's got great dogs, and you know, having his mentorship, and his wife Susan is a veterinarian, so having 24/7 access to a veterinarian is also a huge bonus.
You cannot beat it for sure. So anything else that you want to mention, talk about, a sponsor you may want to thank before I jump into these questions?
Yeah, we had two big main sponsors, Lakeside Pet Retreat here in Wasilla, and then the Alaska Trappers Association was a big sponsor. Also helped me get connected to some beavers for feeding the dogs out on the trail. And so those guys were two big sponsors. We also had a lot of checkpoint and dog sponsors and people getting us stuff off of our Amazon wish list and family and friends. And it takes a whole village, man. It takes a village.
It does. And we're going to talk about how folks can find you online and stuff in just a second. Are you ready for the questions?
Oh, sure.
Okay. So the first question is what is your favorite song and or artist?
You know, this might be hard to believe for most people, but I went the entire Iditarod without putting any earbuds in. I didn't listen to any audiobooks or music or anything. So I think in my whole mushing career, I listened to music one time out on the Denali Highway when I got really sleepy, but, yeah, country music is probably more of my go-to, but I don't have necessarily a favorite song or artist.
Is it old school country like Willie Nelson or new stuff like, I don't know much. Luke Combs, maybe?
Yeah, you know, I like to mix it up. I like some of the old school stuff and then mixing in some new, just a good variety of everything.
Okay. Well, country music is a favorite amongst the mushing community, so you're not alone there. The next one is, what is one piece of gear you always carry with you? It does not have to be mushing related, but it cannot be your phone.
Well, this year I had a new piece of gear that I got out on the trail that I didn't really have a chance to try it out, but it turns out it works amazing and I'm never going without it. And there is a person in Fairbanks that makes these things called nose hats. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
Nope.
It really helps in when it's like that 60 below wind whipping in your face. Cause you know, your face mask can only go up so high and your hat can only come down so low. And it seems like you still get frostbite on like your cheekbones and between your eyebrows. And so this thing is called the nose hat, and it just has, it's like kind of like a headband. It goes around, it can go right over top of your hat, and it's this felt piece of fabric, and it goes up top of your nose and then across your cheekbones, and there's some metal in there so you can mold it to fit your face perfectly, and it really cuts the wind and snow and stuff off of your face and helps prevent some of that frostbite that can happen out there pretty quickly. So yeah, check out the nose hats out of Fairbanks.
And I don't know who it was, somebody came into the finish and had that photo with the duct tape on his nose. Do you know who that was?
I think that was Sam Paperman.
Okay. It looked like he had a rough day with the wind with that on his face, and that nose hat would work out very well. So the next one is a two-parter. What is your favorite trail meal and or snack? And then what are you doing when you're pulling into the gas station or a truck stop or whatever on a road trip? What are you picking up?
Favorite snack out on the trail. Number one, I am not a good eater on the trail. I will just fess up to that right now. But especially when it's really cold out, I really have to try and force feed myself. So, but one of my favorite snacks this year out on the trail, I had made a bunch of banana bread and pre-buttered it and sent it out there. And that really worked. That was just tasted great and was a great pick-me-up. And I looked forward to that at every checkpoint. So I'd say banana bread. And if I'm on a road trip pulling into a gas station, I'm going to pull in and get a Diet Coke.
A Diet Coke, fountain or can or bottle?
I'd have to, if I had my choice, I'd go can.
Okay. All right. Sydney, where can folks follow you? Where are you most active on social?
We have our Facebook page is probably our most active page, and that's just Sydney Bale Musher, I believe is what it's called, but you can just find it by typing in my name on Facebook. And then we also have a website where you can go on and sponsor a dog, sponsor a checkpoint, sponsor some booties, things like that. And that is SydneyBaleMushing.com. And then we have an Amazon wish list, which the link to that is on our website and our social media.
Okay. And I'll definitely put all of those links over on your show notes page. On behalf of my guests, thank you very much for joining us here on the Mushing Podcast. It was fun to get to know you a little bit, and I hope to see you out on the trails next winter.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. On behalf of our guest today, this is Robert for Mushing. We will see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.